Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure.
And I'm very angry.
Jason's very angry, and he'll tell you why coming up on Halas Intrigue. Jason, we're sitting here at State Farm Stadium. The Bears have just lost 29-9 against a Cardinals team that was 4-4 coming into Sunday's game. The quarterback looked bad. The coaching looked bad. The defense looked bad. Everything stunk. Is that a good way to phrase this? Is this why you are mad?
It's infuriating, Patrick. And you know, we're impartial parties. We don't root for the Bears either way. But I am offended by people doing their job poorly. And so many jobs have been done were done poorly Sunday, and have been done poorly throughout the season. The offense is exasperating. And their biggest problem right now, I mean, their biggest issue, the number one thing that the future of their, that like the future direction of their team hinges on, is Caleb Williams' development. And through eight games, he's not where he thinks he should be. He's not where I think he should be. And there is no indication to me that Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron are the guys to get him on track. There is so much wrong with this game all around for the Bears, who are now 4-4 in the light part of their schedule. I don't even really know where to start, but it, like, with the offense, they're going against one of the worst defenses in the league, and they manage 3 field goals. They don't have a drive. They have only one drive that goes longer than 35 yards. Caleb Williams is hovering around 50% completions and getting sacked or pressured all day. They're getting no traction in the run game. The defense is melting down. Like, everything is wrong against a team that's not very good. This is so much worse for the Bears. So much more of a gut punch to who they aspire to be than the Commanders lost on the Hail Mary.
Yeah, the Commanders lost. They rallied to take the lead. They held the NFL's leading offense to 12 points until the Hail Mary. There are a lot of good things to take away from the Commanders' loss, except for, you know, the Tyreek Stevenson gesturing at the fans and then giving up the touchdown part of it. And this, Jason, I struggle to find anything positive to bring out of this. The Bears seem to be hungover after maybe their worst week in a year, if not longer. The defense that usually can stop the run, although we've seen cracks forming there, really got blown out by a run game that was decent but not a world-beating one.
It was 213 yards today.
Yeah, and then, like you said, the most disturbing part is the lack of production from Caleb Williams and from the offense. And it was just, you know, just stylistically, Caleb was running for his life the whole game. And you're worried about him. You know, there were times when, you know, he had to, you know, run from one sideline to the next. It never really produced anything. And then at the end of the game, he tweaks his ankle, although he says he'll be okay. We'll get to that in a second. It was just bad. And you can sit there and point to, well, the Bears played with their third-string left tackle, a guy who hadn't played a game since last season. But there was more to it than that, too.
A lot of injuries, a lot of problems on the O-line, and but even their O-line at full strength has not been what Ryan Poles thought it was going to be. I mean, there's a major misevaluation there by him, or underdevelopment by the staff, combination of the two. Like, that has not been what he thought it would be, and it's not even been a serviceable offensive line for a rookie quarterback. You have, after this game, Patrick, the Bears, Matt Eberflus' rallying cry. Let's talk about Matt Eberflus for a minute. His rallying cry after the game, his message to the team is, new season starts now. We're square one, Tevin Jenkins said. 4-4, let's, you know, everything's even. That is not at all where they should be at this point. That you, if you were an optimistic observer of the Bears, if you believed in what they had put together, which I did, you would have thought maybe one of two things. One, they could beat up on enough of these lighter teams in the first 9 games and then hold on for dear life in the second half and sneak into the playoffs. Or, even better for them would have been, win during these first 9 games, which ends next week with New England coming to Soldier Field before it gets so much harder for them. Win during these 9 games, you know, build up your record a little bit, but also Caleb gets better by about midseason, when you saw Jordan Love kind of click over last year, and you're actually ready to tangle with the second half of your schedule. They are nothing in either of those areas right now. They're not there at all. They have this game against the Patriots next week, which you've hit a point with them where it's like, what is a sure thing for them? That seems like it should be, but this, to me, should have been way more manageable for them. Maybe it was a pick'em game at the end or Cardinals by one. I mean, you're going on the road, but this is a Cardinals team that it was 500 coming in, terrible defense pretty much in every facet, a team you should have been able to handle. And then you have New England going to be kind of the same next week. But, man, Pat, the Packers are coming. The Vikings, the Lions, all of those teams twice. San Francisco, Seattle. Like, the Bears are nowhere near ready for that.
That's my addendum to, I think, your first option. My addendum, too, was even if you acknowledge that the second half was going to be a bear, at the start of the season you figured, you know, the Vikings will probably be bad. Middling. You might have a chance to split, maybe with the Vikings and the Lions, who the Bears seem to play fairly well. But all three of those teams appear to be in a far different weight class than the Bears are at this point. A lot can change in a couple of weeks, but from where we sit right now, is there anything that would lead you to believe that the other three teams in the NFC North are playoff teams and the Bears are what? Just trying to hang on?
The other three teams are comfortably above 500, even with Green Bay losing on Sunday. This 4-4 at this point in the season is way behind schedule. And if you are sitting at home watching these games, tearing your hair out watching Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron coach this team, I think that the second half, it looks sure looks right now like the second half of the schedule is going to take care of business for you. It's going to handle what you want done.
Yeah, or one way or the other. I'd even take it to a less dark place. As they figure it out, you might have something, but there's nothing right now that we've seen that shows that they've figured it out or that they're close to it.
You know where how it feels to me with Matt Eberflus, Pat, and you please weigh in on this if this resonates with you or not. We hit a point last season with Justin Fields where it was clear he was not going to be back unless he showed us something completely different than everything he had shown to that point. We are at that point, in my opinion, with Matt Eberflus. Matt Eberflus is...
Jason Leisure, as we're sitting here, has managed to turn on a faucet.
A
touchless faucet. Continue.
Matt Eberflus is clearly pointed toward the door right now, in my view. And he would have to show us something totally different than what we've seen from him in 3 years to change that.
Yeah, they have to make a turn in the right direction, for Ryan Poles, I think, to believe that they're going the right way. You know, my thought on Eberflus's job security was that if Caleb kept getting better the way he had up through the Jaguars, then it would be hard to change your staff if, you know, there was just this steady stair step of progress all season long. But, you know, Caleb Williams has taken a step back the last 2 weeks, and, you know, it's what a rookie quarterback does. I'm not sure that it's time to panic on him yet, but they don't have the momentum offensively that they need to have for anybody associated with the Bears to think they're going in the right direction.
I agree with you that it's absolutely not time to panic on Caleb Williams. 8 games in, and he's going to get at least 3 years to... doesn't even have to master it in 3 years to get more time, but show that he's got a handle on it and is moving in the right direction. I just think if you're Ryan Poles and you've brought in this incredible asset in the number one pick in the draft, you're sitting here really concerned that you don't have the right people in place to bring out the best in him, and you are going to repeat Bears history by ruining quarterbacks. That's their reputation. And they did it to the last two quarterbacks too. Mitch Trubisky and Justin Fields had a limit on what they could do. They could only be so good. They both have been benched or put on second string by other teams. But especially in Fields' case, you see him go somewhere else and they get more out of him than the Bears did. You see in Mitch Trubisky's case, they didn't ever reach what potential you thought Mitch could have. Like on Mitch's best day, what he could be. And you're seeing that with Caleb Williams, if you're Ryan Poles, I think, because you had this incredible evaluation of him as a college prospect, where Ryan Poles compared him to Patrick Mahomes, and Ryan Poles would know. Mm-hmm. He was part of the group that drafted and developed Patrick Mahomes. And then you saw a training camp, if you're Ryan Poles, that confirmed a lot of what you'd seen. And now you're seeing in the games, and especially these last 2 weeks, Pat, against a kind of mid-tier Washington defense and a bottom-tier Arizona defense, no progress.
Nope.
No growth. And Ryan Poles needs to be honest with himself and point right at that offensive line as part of the problem. And that, this is not a one-time thing today. That's been ongoing.
There's a trade deadline on Tuesday, Jason. The Bears, it doesn't feel like it, but the Bears are 4-4. I can't remember the last time they were 500 at the deadline or better. Is it worth even throwing future draft picks at veteran help, whether it's on the O-line or D-line, in your opinion? Or do you just say, let's get through this season, we'll go from there?
No short-sighted move is worth it right now.
No.
For them. Absolutely not. But there's a big umbrella for what you could call long-range moves. Anything on the offensive line that helps Caleb Williams helps your long-term. A move like they made for Chase Claypool or Montez Sweat, one of those worked out, one of those didn't, but the logic behind both of those was, even though it's not a go-for-it-now type move with those teams, it was lock in a player that will be part of the future core.
Luckily for the Bears, Chase Claypool was so bad that even the Bears gave pause to giving him an extension and wound up farming him out. I want to talk real quick about the way the first half ended today. It's a 53-yard run on a third down draw. Matt Eberflus says,
by the way, before that play,
yeah,
Bears in perfect position to take control of the game.
Yeah.
They get a late field goal, pull within 14-9.
So, yeah.
And would have the ball coming out of halftime with the chance to take the lead. That was the position they were in before what happened.
Matt Eberflus calls a pass blitz, essentially. And they run a draw, and the Cardinals guy, whose last name I can't pronounce, and I'm sorry.
DeMarcado?
Yeah, DeMarcado. What's the first name?
Amari DeMarcado.
Is it just Amari?
I think so. But okay. He's there. I can find out for you.
My apologies.
There's the touchless water again.
My apologies to Mr. and Mrs. DeMarcado.
He's their third string running back, by the way.
So Matt Eberflus says after the game, Jason, that's my fault. I called a pass pressure, and they caught us on a handoff. Does Eber, you know, you ask him about how much responsibility he takes in the offense, and he says, yes, that's on me. You know, he says three or four times something that is a very blatant, hey, put this on me sort of thing. He said that once last week that I can remember, and it was half-hearted at the end. You know, it was like, oh, by the way, this on me. Was this, did somebody get to him in the public relations world? Did he decide he needed to be more forthcoming by owning his own mistakes? Did the players speaking out last week really change the way he thinks he's viewed by them? I mean, to me, the big difference between the Hail Mary and giving up the 53-yard run was that afterwards Matt Eberflus was willing to admit the little bit of culpability on his own part.
I think that it is a small step in the right direction for him in the public-facing part of his job, which that has been a struggle. Mm-hmm. Man, that has been as much of a struggle for him. He's taken as many losses there as he has on the field at the podium. But again, it's a little better than that kind of broad coach cliche of it all starts and ends with me, I blame me, mm-hmm. whatever, because I do think he means it mm-hmm. earnestly instead of just saying it to hold us off. But there's nothing else after that. It's followed by, we got to find the answers. Yeah, we got to circle the wagons. When have the wagons not been circling?
Right.
All they've done is just go in circles and never forward. You know what it reminded me of today? When he's saying, yeah, full responsibility for the offense, and then no answer for what could be different. Yeah. It's a lot how it sounded with Matt Nagy at the end.
Yeah.
Where there's nothing left to say except this is all my fault.
I think that I'm not at the there's nothing left to say portion. I mean, we're not halfway through the season yet, Jason, are we? I mean,
we hit that point about halfway through 2021 with Matt.
It's a pretty, yeah, I don't know. I'm still willing to at least entertain the possibility that something gets better. Aren't you?
Well, the thing that can get better, the wild card that everything could pivot on for the Bears and change tremendously would be Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
Developing and mm-hmm. playing much, much better. He has an 83 passer rating, I believe, for the season right now. It's not very good. That would put you kind of in the bottom of the league. And everything about this guy led you to believe he was going to be better than this to this point. I just still have no confidence at all, Pat, that the current coaching staff is going to bring out the best in him. He will, at best, find a way to overcome them.
And how many teams in football would give you whatever you wanted for Caleb Williams right now?
All of them. Washington would have.
Yeah, all for what? All but 10 players in the league probably would
You mean
be.
Right now who would trade quarterbacks with the Bears and have yeah. Caleb Williams instead of their guy? It's a pretty big number, even with his yeah. struggles this season. That's how much of a consensus there was. This wasn't a media creation, the hype of Caleb Williams being the best quarterback prospect in 3 years or whatever. Like, there was belief in the NFL in that talent.
Do you think the Bears players... There were some questions today about buy-in, and it almost doesn't matter what they say, because the minute you suspect that there's no buy-in, that's kind of the worst part
of
the whole
thing. If it's being asked, you have a problem.
Do you think that, this is cliche, do you think Eberflus has lost the room?
I think
I'm not there yet.
I think he's lost some of the room.
Right.
I think there's some of the room that is sitting there. And when you say Eberflus, I hear it as Eberflus / Waldron. It's all the same. Waldron is an extension of Eberflus. Eberflus has known since day one when he took this job that he's on the hook for the offense. He is not a defensive coordinator anymore. He's responsible for the whole operation. And I'm sure, Pat, there are players in that locker room that are sitting there saying, we are the same thing that I'm saying. We are not going anywhere with Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron. Now, I don't know. I'm not reporting that. But right. You ask me if I suspect that's happening. How could it not be? Especially you have players that know what it should look like. Keenan Allen knows what a good job looks like on offense.
That's an important joiner because it's not like he's coming from the epitome right. of franchise stability or victories.
But Keenan Allen knows what a good offense looks like. So does DeAndre Swift. So does Caleb Williams from his time in college and working with Cliff Kingsbury. So does Cole Kmet, even though he's never been part of one.
He's heard. You mentioned this earlier, the offensive line and the lack of skill, depth, everything.
Yeah.
That is, you could talk about development, but that is also a Ryan Poles issue in terms of, he told us this year that this was as happy as he'd ever been about an offensive line. And, it seems no better than the ones we've seen before. Do you suspect that some of that wariness about a coaching staff would apply to the GM as well?
No, not at this stage, because I think I like the roster. I think this roster is better than what the record is.
Okay.
There are major issues with the offensive line, and the only thing I would say about that, though, is you look at some of the things the Bears are missing. Like a left tackle, for example. Even if Braxton Jones is healthy, there's been regression this year from him. If you want that problem solved, mm-hmm. you have to then have you have to unsolve some other problem.
Right.
So you could have taken an offensive tackle in the 20... Oh, they did take one with Darnell Wright. But, you could have taken one, for example, at number 9 this year, or moved up or whatever. Instead, right. But then you don't have Rome Odunze.
Right.
Then your wide receiver core is DJ Moore. Okay, that's good. Keenan Allen on a 1-year deal and old. Mm-hmm. And then Tyler Scott, I guess. You don't really have a second wide receiver. Do you want to give back Rome Odunze and, solve the problem that way? Do you want to – same thing with defensive end. Do you want to go back to 2023 – take Will Anderson, and then now you don't have that pick to take Caleb, right. And you're stuck with whoever's the fourth quarterback in that draft class or something instead. That there have only been so many resources that they can apply it at different times. Mm-hmm. It is interesting, though, that as they've built, the one thing that they haven't done is build up both sides of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and given that Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham are both linemen at heart, that's a little disturbing. Jason, before we get out of here, you mentioned Montez Sweat. I want to talk about him.
We need to talk about Tyreek Stevenson, too.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Let's go Sweat, then Stevenson. Okay. Alphabetically.
No, it wasn't.
No, I know. Montez Sweat worked out before the game, did not end up playing. He got cleated in the shin last week. It hurt enough that he didn't finish the game against the Commanders. the vibe all week was that they were just worried about getting him ready for Sunday and that he'd probably get there. And then Matt Eberflus explains after the game that, you know, when he was running and turning the corner on his pass rushes, that there was either not enough strength or too much pain there for him to keep going. That's not good for anybody. And especially because on the surface, it appeared to be not anything worth worrying about too much.
You're saying the vibe and what it appeared to be. I mean, Montez said on Wednesday it was not a big deal. He was going to be fine. It was just a cut, a laceration.
Right.
Basically, that seems to have developed into more of like a bruise.
Yeah.
That is hurting the strength of his leg. He's their second most important player. Mm-hmm. He's their highest paid player. And other than Caleb Williams, he is the equivalent in value of Caleb Williams, basically, but on defense. I mean, that's, if I'm building a team, that's my number one and number two spot is quarterback and pass rusher. And also, I think something you saw today is Montez Sweat doesn't probably get enough credit for being a very good run defender at his position.
Yeah, he's the Bears. One of the reasons the Bears were so willing to give up that second round pick for him was he was their kind of guy. You know, he's not a situational pass rusher who doesn't do the dirty work. He's willing to do that. Let's talk about Tyrique Stevenson real quick.
Well, let me set this up because I'm very curious to hear what you discussed with him because I wasn't in there for that. But Tyrique Stevenson, as everybody knows, we're not going to rehash, he blew it on the Hail Mary and has been in the doghouse all week. Matt Eberflus wouldn't say what the discipline was going to be. The discipline turned out to be kind of a collegiate benching where he doesn't play the first two series and then he ends up playing and playing decently well. Tyrique Stevenson talked last Monday on a Zoom call with us after the Commanders game, and then I don't know if I saw him in the building once all week. He very strategically stayed away from anywhere we would be. He did talk after the game today. I haven't heard any of this or read what you wrote about it, so I'm very interested to hear about that conversation.
We can wait. You can read it, and then we'll discuss
well,
later.
Let's talk about it on here.
Tyrique Stevenson said that when he was benched, he was told on Wednesday during the Bears walkthrough, and that he had to go to the locker room and kind of compose himself.
So he's like stormed out.
Like took off, okay. Came back, and finished practice. And he said, essentially, if any of my teammates had a problem with it, nobody said anything to me. He said, I think as a human being, we should all be allowed to go just take a moment and cope with things. Boy, that is a young person phrasing that, that I don't know, the old man in me sits there and goes like, or you can just go through the walkthrough. Like, is that a big deal? So, you know, he said that the coaching staff and his teammates never made him feel like an outsider. He said, you know, I'm a part of this team, and they made me feel like that. He said that coming into Sunday's game, he knew he wasn't starting, but he wasn't sure exactly how much he'd play. As it turned out, Terrell Smith hurt his ankle, and Tyrique, who made he came out in the third series, then Smith came back in the fourth, and then Tyrique played the rest of the way. So as it turns out, it wasn't that different than what it had been. I still question a little bit of, you know, how much he grasps what he did. You know, at some point that you know he makes a passing reference to, you know, it was, you know, the media and social media, you know, really made this out
today.
Yeah, just
the media did this to him.
Yeah, and there's social media too. Yeah, but I think that
I'm not sure about that.
I think that you know, he said, you know, I respect the decision, you know, he said all the right things in terms of his interaction with the authority figures of the Bears, who decided that a lesson needed to be learned here. He said, you know, this could be on my resume for the rest of my life. And, I will now know that I need to play the end of every game until the end of every game.
So, how many stars would you give him out of five for accountability in the post-game press media scrum today?
Between 3.5 and 4, probably. Okay. I mean, the little media jab, I don't appreciate that. That's the only thing keeping it from being a high.
Well, you don't when you say you don't appreciate it, it's not like it's personal. It's not like you're like, oh, don't come after us.
No,
what on earth are you talking about?
Yeah, you're the one
that
messed up.
The media did this?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're the one that messed up. And
how many stars do you give him on professionalism after the game?
Oh, 5.
Okay,
he was good.
Because those would be the two things I'd be wanting to see from Tyrique and his in his discussion publicly on this.
Well, and here's the thing that concerns me if I'm a member of the Bears or of their front office. He may have just cost them two games. Like, there's a, like, it is on the Bears coaching staff to get everybody ready to play. It is on the Bears veterans, who are very happy to tell us that they're veterans and that they're invested. It is on them to get themselves ready to play. But boy, this looked like a team that just allowed one game to beat them twice, didn't it? And, you know, and we'll never find out how they would have done against the Cardinals had that Commanders Hail Mary not landed. But Tyreek Stevenson doing his job would have at least, you know, given them, I think, more of a puncher's chance today.
I'll ask you one question to get out on here. They have the Patriots next week, and then just that absolute gauntlet that we mentioned of the final eight games. Coming into today, every one of those opponents in the final eight was 500 or better. I think Seattle might have dropped a game below today, but still really, really tough. What happens next, Pet? How do you see the rest of the season playing out here?
I don't think it looks good, Jason. I think that the fact that the Packers are on that schedule, you know, there have been Bears coaches over the years whose success or failure against the Packers has a pretty outsized impact on how they're viewed. You know, I think that game being the first game that they play as part of this gauntlet is going to be a really important test for them. You know, you look at what Jordan Love did today. He was bad. And, you know, the Bears at home, where they haven't, you know, lost a game in a year against a quarterback who has a chance to really turn in a stinker every once in a while. I think that'd be really interesting. My fear, if I'm the Bears, is that...
Jordan Love was really, really good two games against the Bears last year.
Yeah, I know. My fear is that this thing just goes completely off the rails. I think there are too many veterans and I to let that happen. And I think that the coaching staff's... I disagree with a lot of their strategic decisions, but I do think that they emphasize the right things in terms of discipline a lot of times. Although you wouldn't know it by all the penalties today. Whatever. I don't think it's going to go off the rails, at least at first. But, boy, that Packer game is going to tell us a lot.
Can they get 9 wins? Can they get to 9-8?
That's what I thought they'd finish with.
Do you think that now?
Nah, 5-4, and then you got to go 4-5 or 4-4 the rest of the way. I don't see them getting there. Do you? I mean, you know, if you beat the Vikes at home, you beat the Packers at home.
Man, those are such reaches right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, you beat the Seahawks at home. I mean, that's the formula. Is,
I mean, who have they beaten? They've beaten all these bad teams: the Rams, the Jaguars.
They beat the Rams, who beat the Seahawks today. So I mean, that's
Rams are a bottom 10 defense.
Yeah.
Rams, Jaguars, Panthers, Titans. I mean, that's who they've beaten. This is even Green Bay. You are right when you mentioned the fallibility of Green Bay right now.
Right.
Even that is such a step up from what they've beaten so far.
Yeah, and you know, it all comes back to, not to oversimplify it, but Caleb Williams, if he gets better, they have a chance. And if he plays the way, and the offense plays the way it played against Arizona, boy, it's going to be a lot more of this. Is that depressing enough of a way to finish? Can I leave you with a fun fact I learned today?
Is it actually fun?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay.
Cheez-Its were created before sliced bread was created.
I didn't know that. So sliced bread is the greatest invention since Cheez-Its.
And also Cheez-Its like 40 years older than a goldfish.
Cheez-Its are something I could eat an entire box of and enjoy it. Obviously, that would be unsafe. And I would pay for it afterward.
Right.
But I could eat a whole box of Cheez-Its and I'd be happy when I did it. I just wouldn't be happy after.
Do you go regular Cheez-It, or do you go with any of those like fancy Cheez-Its?
I don't think I've met a Cheez-It that I dislike yet.
I know, but like, would you choose bold
to
Cheez-It?
Eat, I could eat a whole box of the regular Cheez-Its.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
But I like the spicy ones. I like have you had ranch?
No, that sounds horrifying.
It's pretty good if you like ranch. I like the extra crispy.
Yeah, those are good, yeah.
I sometimes will, I don't want to sound like a health nut, but I'll sometimes get the low-sodium Cheez-Its.
The low-fat Cheez-It,
or whatever
I would argue to you, might be better than
it doesn't have the same crisp, but it is better for you. I haven't met a Cheez-It that I dislike, Pet.
So are you happier now than you were at the start of the podcast?
Yeah, I'm thinking about Cheez-Its, but now you got me thinking about Cheez-Its, but there aren't any.
No, this is a press box with Cheez-Its.
They did. They had a giant bowl of Cheez-Its here, but they certainly aren't going to have that at 8:30 at night now. It's gone.
Also, I believe the stadium was home of the Cheez-It Bowl.
I'm going to go to Walmart or something right now in Arizona and just get every kind of possible Cheez-It. and go to check out, and they're going to think I'm high.
By the way, and when I said the stadium was home of the Cheez-It Bowl, I mean lowercase b bowl, but also uppercase bowl. It was a college bowl game.
Okay. All right. I didn't even know that one existed, honestly.
Anyway, he's Jason. I'm Pat. We will be back later this week. Lord knows what the Bears have in store. You can follow us on social media or on the Sun-Times website or in print. He's Jason Leisure. I'm Patrick Finley. We'll talk to you again real soon.